Tabletop Game Talk on Topic, a show where we talk about tabletop gaming topics of all kinds. I'm one of your hosts, Kitty.
I'm Sydney.
I'm Spencer.
And I'm Chris.
Last week, we talked about KeyForge. This week, Chris is pretending we're not talking about it again by saying we're talking about organized play. And the rest of us are going to try our best to talk about organized play as a whole.
But first, as always, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Joljam, Georgia, Adam Harrison, the SGC, Thomas Acciaretti. And thank you to our newest patron, Glenn Cotter. And thanks to all of our other patrons as well. Okay, we're really not talking too much about KeyForge.
We aren't. You are.
We talked enough about KeyForge before we started recording.
That is true. That's true. Well, there's a lengthy discussion on our BGG thread, which is at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG, nice episode plug. 119 feedback, about KeyForge and all those different things. So if you're curious and want to interact more about that subject, let me know. But we are, I promise we'll talk more and more about organized play. First, we should talk about Josh isn't here again. It's his birthday today.
Yeah. Right?
As we
the day
record.
That we're recording, it's his birthday.
Yeah.
Happy belated birthday, Josh. You may or may not hear this as you sometimes listen to these episodes.
And he is in London for this episode and next episode. So we're pulling in Spencer and Sydney because they're our favorite people.
Takes two of us to make one of him.
That's yes. Right.
Yep. So, but that's fine because we are talking about organized play and Kitty has decided to be our Josh for this episode.
Yeah, I have never played in an organized play event, so I have no experience. I'll be asking all the questions.
And Spencer, you've done organized play just at GameholeCon, right? That's your kind of first experience with it?
Yep, that was the last time I did it. Also the first time I did it.
All right, but you did it a lot.
Yeah, I mean that weekend.
All right. So, and Sydney, you've been doing...
Since I was a kid. I started off at Pokemon, and then I went to Mage Knights. I've done a lot of organized play.
All right. And I am actually, as this episode airs, will be doing an organized play for Arkham Horror the Living Card Game at the Gift of Games in Grace Lake. Tables are already booked, but if you're in the area and want to stop by and say hi, feel free. And that's really what made me think about, it's like, you know, I've been doing a lot of organized play at the game local game store, the Gift of Game, Grace Lake. Hi, Chim. Well, he said I should mention this door, so I did. But
Twice. You're welcome. But
where are you doing this again? I didn't catch that.
The Gift of Games, Grace Lake, Illinois. Wonderful place.
Yeah.
You should try it sometime. Okay. Come by. Stop Maybe over. So, but I mean, we're doing Shadespire, which we've talked about a little bit. Sydney and I are in a league there. We did the KeyForge. I guess it was the launch event.
Yeah, but he started having events regularly for KeyForge.
Yep, so now he's doing Friday night KeyForge. And the Arkham Horror organized play is something that I'm like, I want to teach people how to play Arkham Horror the card game, so let's do that. Fantasy Flight's pretty good at promoting that and giving away prizes and stuff like that, so that's one of the reasons why it's cool to do. But we should first define organized play. Kitty, what is organized play to you?
It is a organization that so you know, it's like when you have a league set up, it's like a bowling league, but instead of bowling, you're playing one of these games, like the six I think you've already mentioned.
So do sports teams count?
Sports teams Ooh. Are technically organized and they do play.
Have you ever been in a sports league? Like when you were a kid?
No.
Really? You never did any kind of team sport? You were in like softball? You didn't play soccer or basketball or anything?
I think
I
did.
This explains so much. Kitty's also never used a lawnmower.
I think I did AYSO soccer until I was like 8, and I got hit in the face with a soccer ball very, very hard, and I said, no, thank you.
And that's why you've never done organized play?
I don't like being told what to do.
Okay.
I enjoy individual activities.
But you do like organizing things.
I like organization.
Okay. All right, well, it's sort of like that. Sydney,
not a good definition.
Yeah, why don't you give this a try?
So organized play to me is where there's a scheduled time for people to come together to play a specific game. And sometimes that includes prizes and a structure to how you play. Sometimes that includes getting together at that specific time and just playing.
Okay. And Spencer, you played organized play through Dungeons & Dragons, the Adventurers League.
Yeah. Although I'm still kind of caught here on the definition of organized play because from the stuff that we've been saying, maybe most of my gaming has been organized play. Because usually when I play a board game or a tabletop role-playing game or something like that, it's prearranged with friends, we're going to get together at this time and play this thing. That sounds like organized play to me.
So I would say the difference from what I understand is the organized play event is something run by a store or a convention or something like that. It is not a group of friends that get together to play a game in an organized fashion. It is an event put on by either the publisher through game stores or conventions or something like that. It is more of a league than a flag football game that you and your friends put together in the park.
And to back up on that, the sponsored by the creator of the game in some way, possibly, like maybe there's swag given for the players of Keyforge or Arkham Horror or D&D or something.
Sure. But so again, some of the games that I signed up for and played at GameWorldCon, a lot of them were D&D Adventures League, and that's there's
definitely
a,
you know, league
there
play.
And all that. But there were also just open events that I signed up for that didn't have any like context or organization outside of that thing. So is the key here just that it's open to the public?
So you are all right. because organized play can be a lot of different things. Now, if you're talking about Adventurers League for Dungeons & Dragons or Pathfinder Society for Pathfinder, these are both role-playing games, Wizards of the Coast and Paizo. Organized play there can be structured. It can happen at a store. It almost always happens at different conventions. The bigger conventions will have some kind of organized play events there. But the modules themselves, the adventures you go on, if you play those at home, those can also count against your organized play time and credits.
Really?
So technically, because you're playing an organized play event, even if it is with just your home group, it's still part of organized play. So that's where Spencer says, you know, it sounds like if I schedule a time with my friends, that can be organized play. It can be. And you would get the credit for it. Now, I would say that if we just said, hey, let's play D&D tomorrow, we would not call that organized play. We would call that, hey, let's get together and play D&D tomorrow.
Would you need to log the result or somehow report that you've played the specific organized version of it if it's just with your friends?
Yeah, you track it. You track it the same way. So you're still going to track, and this is where I, you know, golden experience before, what I got during, all that. So you're still going to track it like you played at an organized play event for role-playing type of stuff. But most of this organized play that I'm kind of referring to will happen at game stores and or conventions. So Magic the Gathering is actually where kind of official organized play started. Somebody will kind of split hairs on this, but if you go back to 1993, I know that was a long time ago. That's when Magic started. Suddenly this game existed where it was kind of a tabletop game, and the only way, like, you were building decks to play against each other, but you wanted to actually play against people. So what ended up happening, and I'm not sure if Wizards of the Coast started this concept or if stores started it, but people started saying, hey, come to the store, buy some Magic cards, and we're going to play tournaments, or we're going to have open play, and we're going to do this on a regular basis so that you can keep, you know, people kept coming in and buying cards and doing stuff. So Magic is really where all of this started, and it worked amazingly well. Friday Night Magic became like a thing, and you could come in, you'd play, you might have sealed deck tournaments, whatever the case. That's what made like people really liked playing this game.
I just love that it's Friday Night Magic. It's always Friday Night Magic. Yep. And I think it's so funny because it's like, oh, what else would be going on in a small local town on a Friday night? Like, all these nerds are like, football? What's that?
Well, but that's the thing that's made it so great. And I think Friday Night Magic was something that Wizards of the Coast started. They're like, let's make this a consistent day so everyone knows you can go to just about anywhere in almost the world, go to a game store on Friday night, and someone will be playing Magic. And that's organized play in general, like really kind of made that explode into something bigger than it would have been if you did not have that organized play. Now, this was pre-internet. Now we can do meetup things and stuff like that, so a little bit more.
Is that why growing up, my Pokemon nights were designated Wednesdays?
Yes.
That makes sense.
Because one of the things that if you're organizing something, one of the things that is probably the most important is consistency.
Sure.
So we're going to say Pokemon is on Wednesday, Magic is on Friday. Rain or shine, this is when it is. So if you show up on a Wednesday, you have a Pokemon deck, you'll likely have someone that you can play with. And that concept has been carried forward by a number of different companies. Now, Wizards of the Coast does probably Magic being the biggest thing, Magic and Pokemon for Wizards of the Coast, and D&D is all Wizards of the Coast. They probably have one of the bigger, more organized play stuff. But Fantasy Flight has been doing
the most organized play.
Yeah, the most organized play. Although people will argue about that too. So a lot of their organized play, especially for the D&D stuff, is handled outside of Wizard of the Coast proper. They have volunteers and stuff that manage it. But they do have an organized play manager that is inside the company. But that concept of having some place to go to play games and having that schedule, that's really kind of what I'm more thinking about here.
Also, having a place to play kind of puts you under a little bit of an umbrella of having to play by their rules. So if they are setting up a tournament that is played a certain way, like you go to a Keyforge tournament and everyone there is opening the decks right before they play, that's the organized play you've signed up for that night.
Yep.
Or if you go to a, like our Shadespire League recently adopted the banned and restricted list. So we had to make sure our decks met that to continue in our league at the Gift of Games.
Yeah. And adding that organization to it, that structure, is sort of what makes it worth going to these events, because you know that you're all playing on the same field, per se. So there's a few different types of organized play. And I'm just kind of going to throw these out there. There's kind of this casual play, just come and play. There's no real rules, just show up and we'll play decks and find someone to play with. What do you think about that level of organized play for whatever game? And usually, again, typically we're talking about dueling games or some kind of competitive game, but it could be really anything. But let's think more in the competitive realm, because I think that makes it a little bit, or the D&D realm.
So many slots at a table, sign up. When we have people, we'll play. There's nothing outside of that event. Like you don't have to, it doesn't carry over. You don't have to register something.
It's not
like we're keeping score. That's kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah. You just show up and play. But
that's my most fun kind of game.
I actually really enjoyed that. When I was playing the Game of Thrones trading card game at Dice Dojo, the only way I was able to make sure my deck got better before and between tournaments was to casual play. And it was really hard for me to find people outside of going to that casual play at that game store to test my decks against.
I think that it's a really great way to learn games, too, if you don't have a lot of experience with a game. It's a really nice way to approach it without feeling like you need to know the rules. You don't have to be the one teaching it to your game group. You can go and pick it up from other people who've played before. My fear, and maybe what's kept me away from some of these organized play things, is it's hard to tell sometimes as advertised, is this casual or is it competitive? Or even if it's advertised as casual, am I going to show up and find that everyone who is interested in it is actually extremely competitive? And I think that can be kind of a barrier to entry for organized play for people who are inexperienced with it.
Yep. For sure, because in that case, there sometimes might be tokens you need or counters you need that you don't know you need. And so coming into a casual play event still might not be enough for you to be able to play the game.
That was one of the sort of, I guess, fears that I had signing up for open play events is that there was prep work or equipment that I was expected to have with me or to have like done ahead of time that I wasn't aware of. That ended up not being the case. All the games that I signed up for, someone said, oh, if you brought a character, you can do it, but I've got pre-gen characters, I've got dice and all of that. But I don't know, have you run into anything, Chris, like that in the past?
So typically what you want to do for casual play, it's open, it's welcome, it's all you can walk in and say, I've never played this before, and sit down and play. There's three other types of organized play that you want to keep your eye out for, which will kind of highlight these issues that you're bringing up. So league play is one. League play, you are going to start something and you're going to continue it over a number of weeks. League play is tricky to get into unless you get in at the beginning, because typically a league will be you're going to play these different people and there's like a schedule to do that with. So if you want to get involved in a league, you really have to just talk to the stores ahead of time and say, hey, when is this starting?
Yeah, and you're talking about a league, like, we are setting up a bracket, we are moving through it, it is start, finish, there are goals that you're moving through, you're playing the same people each week, and you are building towards a finish. It has a set amount of time. Yeah. Not something like Adventures League, where it has the word league in it, but it's not actually a league.
Yeah, well, a little bit of both. So you typically don't have a bracket, but
Might be a round robin.
Okay.
Right. So our Shadespire League, I think we have, like, 10 people...
We have a little more than that, like 12.
So we have a bracket. We're doing, I think it's over 8 or 10 weeks, and you're going to play almost everyone once is kind of how that works out. In Adventure League, it's sort of a league, but it's a league you can drop in and out of. So it's a very different thing. It's not bracketed. It's not in any way.
It is tiered, if I am not mistaken. There's tier one adventures for levels like one new characters through... I thought it was five.
One through five, five through ten,
and so on. And you need to find make sure you were playing the correct tier of the Adventures League. Yeah.
Yep.
And you had an issue with this, didn't you?
Yeah. So I'd never played before. So I was coming in level one. And I just signed up for whatever games were available and didn't pay attention to this tier thing. So I happened to sign up for tier one games most of the time, but I signed up for a tier three accidentally. And then I was like, oh God, I broke the rules. Like, they're going to get all mad at me and throw me in D&D jail. The dungeon. I'm going to meet them. I'm going to see the dungeon. No, but they handled it really well. And I think because especially that event is there's so many tables.
Yeah, you were at Gamehole Con and there were... hundreds, I think, of tables looked like. I think there were 150 just Adventure League tables. So you showed up and said, oh, I accidentally signed up for this game. And they were like, oh, we'll just move you two tables to the left or whatever.
There was somebody in charge of all the tables. So it was like a Dungeon Master Master. I talked to the Dungeon Master Master, and the Dungeon Master Master found me another Dungeon Master to play with for a tier one game at the same time.
And at stores, when I've done DMing there, if I'm doing a higher level tier, and we only have one or two tables, so we don't have an option of a low one, I will just give them a pre-gen for, you know, level five or six or whatever so they can play. Or I'll take their level one and be like, okay, we're adding this many hit points. You're going to get this many plus ones here. And as we start playing...
sort of pseudo-level them for that one game.
Yep. Because organized play is not about... it's about getting people to play and have fun. It's not as much as, here are these strict rules. You must abide by them.
Unless you're playing Magic.
Right. And that's the thing. So you have some leagues that are very strict. You know, we talked about our Shadespire League, where they've just recently introduced restricted and banned cards. And it was a debate within the league whether or not we were going to adopt these restrictions mid-league. And we did a vote on it. We decided we were going to. So now we expect that people are going to come with legal decks. But that was a pretty decent debate as to, like, what we were going to do there.
It was also very civil. It ended up in a poll on Facebook to end the discussion and just pick a side.
Yeah, just vote. So, but it was not a unanimous vote.
How many weeks is this league?
12?
I think it's 12. Yeah, 12 with a couple breaks for the
Thanksgiving
holidays.
And Christmas.
Yeah.
And are you, like, significantly into it? Has it only been a couple weeks?
Sunday will be our fifth week.
Yeah.
So, okay. Because I was going to say, if it's like the first few weeks, I feel like it's easier to make that change than like, oh, it's only for the last 2 weeks. But it's being in the middle makes it almost the hardest place to decide.
Yeah. Well, they're like rankings and winners.
Yes.
There's like a champion at the end or something.
For this particular league, yes. We have
standings of whether you are like what your standings are during the weeks, and then your who you're playing has already been determined. So you don't play people based on your standings, but the standings will determine where you are in the rankings.
Did you say it was a round robin?
It's more of a just everyone plays everyone once type of thing. So that, which is a straight, I think
that is a round robin.
I think it's
round
robin. Yeah. Because you also have Swiss, and Swiss is a similar where you're playing against people who have similar records. Yes. Round robin is you play against everyone.
One time. Or
one or less. Yeah, determined number.
So then what, just the person with the best record at the end is like the champion or whatever?
Yeah, so we have winner, which is the best record. We also have the best painted miniatures.
Which Chris is going for.
I won't win though. There's some really good, really good painters. We have participation. So just showing up every week, you know, you'll get participation prizes and stuff. And that's the big thing with organized play. Win or lose, or even if there is no, you know, quote unquote winner, oftentimes there's swag. you know, show up, we get posters, you get pins, buttons, maybe some promo art cards or something like that.
Or resources for the game.
Yeah, tokens and custom tokens and stuff.
Ever since I found out about these keys you can win through KeyForge Organized Play, I'm like, I might have to take the plunge into Organized Play and start doing some of these events because they're so cool. And KeyForge is so, like, you don't need the stuff. So I don't want to put money into buying stuff I don't need. But if I can win it, that feels so much better.
Yeah. Well, and that segues us into, because we've kind of alluded to it, league play is not tournament play. Tournament organized play is different. This is probably the most off-putting to new players. If I say, oh, there's a Shadespire tournament and it's going to last all day Saturday, a casual player isn't going to be like, sign me up. And in fact, tournaments tend to be one of the least casual friendly of all organized play. You can do it for a little bit and people might come because they just want to check it out. But soon enough, you're going to have this people that love to compete. And in that particular store, you're going to have these hyper competitors, which are going to push away the lower competitive tournament players.
And it's not even the love to compete. It's people that do spend a lot of time and energy and in some cases money, get to a point at which they are beating decks of people who are casual players who aren't doing that.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I always think that's kind of what tournaments are for. Regardless of what the sport or the activity, the hobby is, tournaments are for people who take it really seriously and are really competitive.
Yep.
I like some of these blind open idea tournaments where it takes the extra time, the outside time out of the prep. You don't have to do as much prep to be competitive. As long as I know the game, I'm good at the game, I can go in there, and it means I haven't had to spend hundreds of dollars. It does, however, put in this element of luck.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we were doing Dice Masters, we ended up drafting, and the drafting is really interesting because you end up picking what you think will work together, but you're competing against other people in just the compilation of what you're playing with.
Yeah.
Magic seems to do the same thing with drafting, where you can do these drafting tournaments that you all open a number of packs, you draft your decks, and then you play. KeyForge seems completely different because it really is literally luck of the draw.
Yeah.
You don't do any of that building. Yeah. For so it.
If we look at, go ahead.
Unless you spend a lot of money.
Not for a tournament.
Okay.
Yep.
The blind tournament is you get
deck.
There, they hand you a sealed box, you open it and play with it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So yeah. Sealed draft is a very, very common Magic format, especially at organized play, Friday Night Magic things. You have eight people. You get a number of booster packs, which I believe is three, and then you draft them. And so you're going to end up with 45 cards. You're going to be able to add as many land as you want to create your deck. There is an art, not necessarily an art, a skill to drafting, though. So whenever I play in a sealed draft for Magic, I just draft the rarest card, which is a guaranteed I'm going to lose almost 90% of the time. It's a very strong likelihood that you're not going to build a great deck if you're rare drafting. But the really good Magic players that are good at draft, they know every card in the set. And they know what cards are going to work well together. And they can draft a deck that will just beat everybody because they know what they're doing. And that is a skill all by itself, which is also super intimidating. Now, if I rare draft, I still walk away with a bunch of rares. But that's not necessarily fun to lose with a bunch of rares.
You can go on eBay and just buy a bunch of rares. It's not going to get you the same experience.
Right.
But you do. Seriously, for Magic, I feel like you have to go and you have to do even more research. I seriously think that KeyForge might be what gets me into organized play because it takes out that I can't compete because I don't have the free time to dedicate to this.
And in that case, you're not drafting. So if you get a deck that is really good, you might do well in the tournament. If you get a deck that's really valuable or rare, then you're excited about that too. So either way, you've won.
Well, and if you get a deck that's terrible, you just blame the deck.
You blame the deck. And you might still walk away with some swag for being a good sport or whatever it is.
I'm excited.
Be a good sport to do.
Yeah. If you throw your deck across the room, you tend not to get the promo.
You may need to rethink the strategy, Kitty.
You know, I think that might be another reason I have been turned off by tournament play and competitive organized play in general is I still have that table flipper in me. And if I get into a situation, I don't want to be that person at the game store who everyone knows is like, oh, you don't want to play her. you got paired with her, man. Like, you know, you just... I know that about myself, so I don't want to put myself in that situation.
I'm excited for the Keyforge style of tournament where you bring the worst possible deck that you think you own and you hand it to your opponent and they are handing you what they think is their worst deck. And the goal is to beat them because you think you've handed them a worse deck than they've handed you. I'm really excited for that style of tournament to start popping up.
Yeah, I'm not sure that anything where you swap decks is going to actually be a viable tournament strategy, but I do like that idea that you can do that.
And I actually think that's particularly good for people who are really into the game.
Sure.
Right? Because that now there's this challenge of, all right, I have the worst deck that my opponent could give me.
I'm going to prove them wrong.
Who's better at maiming someone else?
Yeah.
So briefly to go back to the sealed deck, because I agree. I think that having an entire deck you get... I don't like competitive play. I don't like tournament play. I like Magic. I don't play it much anymore, but I do like the game. Game of Thrones, Shadespire, Dice Masters, all of these things that I could have gotten really into at a tournament level. I just stopped doing it because I didn't have the time to make the best deck. And the biggest problem is someone else has already made the best deck. And I understand that a big enough card pool, there really is no such thing as the best. But there are decks out there where you go online, you just create that deck, you go and you play at these tournaments, and you end up playing the same decks over and over and over because anyone can build these kind of like meta game decks that they're playing. Keyforge doesn't have that problem. I sit down and maybe someone has the most amazing deck ever. I only have to play it once. Like, I'm not going to see that deck over and over. So I agree with Kitty. I think that I keep saying Shadespire. Keyforge is a game where I look forward to any sealed deck tournament. I will automatically, take my money, sit down. I'm going to walk away with a deck no matter what, and I'm going to play and have fun playing and seeing all this other stuff.
I hope your friend from The Gift of Games is listening.
That's Tim. Hey, Tim.
I think you can get Chris to go to one of these tournaments.
So they're every Friday night now. He's doing them on Fridays in December. So, yeah. But, of course,
Spencer, you've got the baby Friday night.
Yes, I do.
Yep. Next Friday, I will definitely be there. Or actually this Friday, because Friday has already passed. So the other types of organized play events besides, so we talked about casual, league, and tournament, is launch and preview events. So these are things where it's a new game or a new set to the game, and the publishers are trying to get the word out. So they're going to, basically they're working with stores to say, you're going to get this content a little bit early, or it's going to be like launch night. Magic does this pretty much for every single set. It's launch night. I think some places even do it at midnight, and you play a quick draft or draft tournament or something with that. I really like the concept of these. Kind of gives you... like, it almost always comes with some kind of cool swag, like the metal keys for Keyforge, Mike's and promo arts or play mats or something like that.
That's actually how I got into Mage Knights when I was a kid. I went to a convention that was having a launch event for, or maybe it was a preview. It was an event before the set came out for Mage Knights, and I was in the game room and I decided to play and I won. So they gave me some little figurines and I had to decide if I was going to continue playing with these little figurines. And so I went to my local game store and they started a weekly Mage Knight night. So preview events really got me into it.
Yeah, I need to do more of them, actually.
So the kind of organized play that I have not done that I'm actually the most interested in, to completely change the subject, especially away from Keyforge, is more cooperative, more of the role-playing game, more working together to tell a story, coming together, Adventurers League, or similar organized play type events. But they don't seem to have them at our local game store, and I feel like it can be tough to get into them outside of conventions.
Yep. So, fun story. If you have a local game store and they have a table, like where they can actually play games, and they don't have an organized play, and you're interested, just go up to the owner and say, hey, I want to run an organized play event.
Yeah, but I don't want to do that. So I'm going to have to talk Spencer into running.
I've actually been thinking about doing it. Like my experience playing D&D for Adventures League was good enough at GameholeCon. I enjoyed it enough that I thought, wow, I could do this. And I think running modules in particular would be a good way for me to get into running games. So I might pick up a DMG and see if I can get something like going at our local game store.
Yeah. Well, and even so, that's convenient to be married to someone who will start it and then he can run for you.
That's a good strategy.
Yeah, that is a good strategy. Nice work there. That was forethought there. But even if you do want to play, starting the event will oftentimes bring other people in. And before you know, it's like, hey, I know I DM'd for the first season, but I would like to play. Is there anyone who would like to DM? And then you'll get volunteers that are like, oh, yeah. Because once that starts, once it becomes organized.
Gains momentum.
Yes.
So the real question is, can you do this? All right. Do you remember, is there like a fable of the stone soup? Do you know the story?
Yeah.
Right?
Chris doesn't know stone soup.
You don't know stone soup? So
Bring me the stone soup.
I don't know if we want to recap the whole thing here. Basically, what I'm getting at is, could you pull off what you're talking about without actually running a game? So you organize play and then get the word out. Everybody bring some games. We're all going to play games. But you don't bring anything. You just see what everybody else does and then you coast on their efforts.
The story of stone soup is somebody says, my magic stone makes soup. And then he tricks everyone else into bringing ingredients for the soup. The stone makes really good soup, but only if you guys bring a carrot, a potato,
Everyone should bring something else to go in the soup as well. And then everybody shows up and brings different ingredients.
And then you just put in a rock.
So it's, so the rock is basically like a manager.
Yeah.
And everyone else does the work.
And most managers are like rocks.
Yeah. So okay. All right. Yeah. No, that makes sense. But that actually will work. I'm going to say yes then. Because more often than not, all you need to make people come and do something is someone who's willing to step up and say, we're doing it at this time. This is what I need people to bring, or this is what you need to do, or whatever the case is. Oftentimes that's enough.
Making people aware of it, showing interest, letting people know they're not the only one thinking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want organized play, be a useless manager.
Awesome. Spencer, I'm going to delegate the task.
She learns fast.
Yes. Just how that works. Yeah, but I think there is a lot of potential in cooperative organized play because you really only have two options when you're talking about this. You have competitive. So we just talked about half the games, which are dueling games, right? I actually listed a few here. We have Magic the Gathering, Keyforge, Star Wars X-Wing, Destiny, which is another Star Wars game. We have Warhammer, different versions of that. These are all competitive games that you can usually find an organized play something. Games Workshop, those places exist to bring together all these, I don't want to call them war games, but they're kind of tabletop miniature games. That is relatively easy to find. We also talked about Adventures League and Pathfinder, which is your role-playing stuff. But there is this co-op kind of the storytelling organized play games that I think we're going to see more of coming in the future. Arkham Horror is a good one. The Arkham Horror LCG, because Fantasy Flight supports that as part of an organized play kit. So you can come, you'll get, there's some alternate art cards, there's some play mats that you can win. Actually, you don't really win, you just kind of get for showing up. They're just like participation prizes and stuff. And this is just a four-player cooperative game. You sit down, you play, and if you win together or lose together, come back next week or next month and Arkham Horror is kind of interesting because you get a new chapter pack every month. So it kind of makes for a release event for these chapter packs where it's like, okay, the second Tuesday of every month, we're going to play the newest Arkham Horror adventure.
So we've been playing Betrayal Legacy today.
Yes.
I think this would actually kind of lend itself to organized play because it is a game that you're doing a campaign through. They could, but like you don't do all the campaigns through the game. They could release new chapters for Betrayal Legacy that could be organized play events. I think that would be so much fun.
Yep. I think that you could take, and like Gloomhaven's another one, Pandemic Legacy. Now, a lot of these games are games that you want to play with the same group over and over and over, but you don't need to. Imagine a situation where you're playing Pandemic Legacy Season 1. We're not going to spoil anything, but just in that scenario, we get done with the first month. And we write a session report for what happened. Now, the next time comes in, if we come in and play, great, we have our spots. But if we're not there, someone else takes over, they can read the previous session reports. And now they take over that particular month or replaying the month that we lost or whatever the case is. They write a session report. And you suddenly form this like campaign from these legacy games in an organized play way. It's like the best of both worlds. I don't know. I think that has a lot of potential.
Well, one of the challenges with legacy games, tabletop games, anything that you want to play with people over and over again is getting that same group of people back together.
Yep.
So if you were going to do this in sort of an organized play fashion, you could say, hey, here's our core group of people. We all want to try to be there, but some weeks, you know, one or two people can't make it. If there's, say, another group doing the same kind of thing, you can kind of cross-pollinate a little bit. So most people are playing the same game, but everyone's always got enough people to play.
Yep.
I like the idea of having it where you like sign up and there's multiple tables going on at the same time, like Adventurers League seems to do, where you have a bunch of different tables and they just fill in the numbers and you've got the right number of players and everyone is playing the same campaign through, but with different people each week with like the board is the legacy. So you have to look at like what has and like the same stuff gets unlocked on each board, but in a slightly different way, like, you know. No spoilers, but something comes out to the board in different locations, but it's the same number of things on each board. Yeah. So you know what the symbol is, you know what it does, but it might be a slightly different setup. It's a different haunt. It's a different...
Yeah, that might be interesting to do for like a table round robin. Maybe you're the same group of people and you switch between tables. So every game that you play, you have no idea until you sit down all the stuff that has happened. So you're seeing all these different possible iterations of the game. Might be frustrating, too, that you're not building on your own previous progress, but it'd be an interesting experience.
Especially if you've already played through the whole season, you know the spoilers. As long as you're not giving it away for other people, you know, you can see how it would play in all these different situations without having to relearn all the rules, because it can be hard with legacy games that the rules change each time you play. Yeah.
And one of the things that I like about organized play is that you get to play and meet with so many different people. And so if it were a game in which you were to play a legacy over and over again, mixing that up with different people would be cool too. Yeah.
Or you just find the people that you really like playing with. It's like, okay, this group of people is what really gels. Hey, I want to start season two. Would you guys be interested in, you know, just coming over like every other Saturday and we can play a couple sessions of season two? Still come here and play season one because I've played this season already and I want to see where it goes. So you can, like, anytime you have this cooperative organized play, you start to form mini communities and game groups out of this.
I was going to say, you actually started a campaign with a group that started as a random organized play table for you, did you not?
Yep. So, because I started, this was way back in 4th edition when Wizards of the Coast was starting their organized play for 4th edition. My game store did not have organized play, but I had gone to a convention where they announced and I went to them and I said, hey, I would love to run the organized play program here. Mostly because DMs got a bunch of swag for doing it. I'm like, I want the swag, and the best way to do it, I guess, is just to start it up.
Was it exclusive?
It was mostly, yeah, lots of exclusives.
Of course.
but it was like different custom folders or characters and things like that. So it's like some cool stuff worth doing. So I started that and we actually grew that to like 3 or 4 tables that were running it. So I had to recruit DMs and have that. And then one table just kept having the same players over and over and over. So when that season ended, I'm like, you know, we can do a lot more with these characters. If you guys want to meet like every other month or twice a month, we could totally take this offline. And they were like, yeah. And we ended up doing that for almost a year, you know, just kept playing. So it was a few years later, we actually did a reunion game.
I remember the reunion because we did it when we were living together.
Yep.
So it was pretty cool. I remember you starting it. Weren't they all like crawling out of their own graves?
Yes.
It was such a good start.
It was like basically were these characters that were old, like, and they were now had died, and I'm like, yeah, so now you're all coming back as revenants, and like, so you can do a lot of fun stuff with that. And a lot of that group had not seen each other for like the 3 years between when we ended the campaign and started again. So it was like, there's so many things you can do, and that all started from just organized play. Now Sydney, she will make friends with competitive players. You were playing with, I think his name was Chris, right?
Yeah, no, it was actually pretty great. I learned that he was new to gaming in general. He had literally just started gaming recently.
Playing Shadespire competitively in our league.
Right, but he had also actually started playing games in general recently. He played one of his first games, his family brought Risk. And so he was introduced to gaming on Risk, and that's how he, Shadespire was a nice transition into a very complicated, different strategy game. But we were talking over the game we were playing, and he ended up telling me that he really wasn't into, really didn't know much about games and such. So I recruited him to come to the Arkham Horror table that we're teaching later this week.
Tomorrow.
This guy went from having never played Risk to really like jumping in the deep end.
Huh? Yes.
To playing Shadespire League. Now our league is very casual. We have a few competitive players, but for the most part, we're playing with like half painted miniatures or not painted miniatures.
And, primed miniatures in my case.
Some of them are just primed, but you know, so we have a casual league on purpose because we just want to play the game. And some people are really into the competitive nature of it. You know, when the restricted list came out, they were the ones that were heavy, like, no, I paid money for these cards. This is going to be a problem for my deck. Sydney actually said these exact same things, even though I bought the cards. She's like, I don't want to change my deck. I like these cards.
Hey, when you share a single set of cards with two people and then some of those cards are no longer useful, you have even less cards to pick from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She had more cards to pick from. She had to change like 6 cards. Actually, not even that, like 4 cards out of her 32 card deck. So
it can be tough though. You get really attached to your setup. And especially when you spent so much time learning it and you've like, oh, I've got my strategy down, and then like to have that taken away from you, it can be tricky.
What's that?
I can relate to that. It's not even as much about competition. It's that you built something, right? You put some effort into it and you want to see it play out. So you finally got that thing going, and now it's like the rug's pulled out from under you.
I actually commend a lot of people in our league because one of the rules that we have set is going into a match, you can have a different set of miniatures. It's a different faction than a previous match you've played. You can change your factions between matches. Now, while you're playing someone, those matches will have 3 games, and you can't change them within the match. So if you start by playing a certain faction against me, we have to finish our 3 games with that faction. But some of these guys have played 2 or 3 since we've started. So they've had to create new decks, not only because of the banned and restricted list, but because of the change in faction.
Well, and that's one of the advantages to playing organized play, especially in a league format like this, is if I want to try out a bunch of different stuff, maybe I am, you know, quote unquote, training for a tournament. I want to try out different things. A league is a great place to do that because I know every week I have someone that I'm going to play against, and I can tweak my deck and my armies, and I can try new things. And it's just, you know, it's a casual league, so it's not a big deal. Like, I love that about this. And I love that it's making me play a game that I have everything in. And it's like, oh, yeah, next Sunday, noon, I have to be at the game store because we're playing. And that's fun. That's fun to look forward to that.
It can, though, eat up a lot of your time.
Yep.
Yes.
We once again started playing Betrayal Legacy today, and we were like, oh, when are we going to play next? Scrolling through our calendars. And it is the holidays. There's a lot of family stuff on there, but you can really, like, okay, 2 months from now, we can do this again. Okay. Wah, wah.
We will make this happen a little faster. So Betrayal Legacy, this has nothing to do with organized play, but we're trying to organize play sessions.
There you go.
There you go. See, that's a good segue.
We're so excited about it.
Yeah, but it's fun kind game. Yeah, it is. It's great. If you haven't tried Betrayal Legacy, it's amazing. If
go
you like Betrayal, just go get it without any questions asked. If you didn't like Betrayal, still do it because it's way...
Because if you didn't like Betrayal, you're wrong.
Yeah. It fixes most of the things that people don't like
about
Betrayal.
There are some nitpicky things about Betrayal that can get... That they don't happen in Betrayal Legacy thus far. We've played 2 whole sessions, including the prologue.
So we're experts.
Whatever it is.
This is like, oh, did you not like the first book? You'll love the sequel anyways. Yeah. I don't know, man.
I will say that anyone who has been binge-watching Haunting of Hill House on Netflix, go get Betrayal Legacy because it ties in so well. It's so much fun.
And the last thing we'll say on this, until we have an entire episode on it...
With a big spoiler tag.
With a big spoiler tag. Is that when you're done, there's 13 chapters and then a prologue. So when you're done with that last chapter, your copy of Betrayal Legacy turns into Betrayal on House of the Hill that you can keep playing over and over and over. But it's now customized in based on what you did to get to the modern
day. There's story to it.
Yeah. All right. Back to organized play. Because I don't know. One of the things that I you guys have kind of talked me into, and I didn't even think about it before, is legacy organized play.
Yeah. I just came up with it in this moment because I'm so excited about Betrayal Legacy. Can we talk about that more?
Let's talk about how, just in theory, how a legacy organized play, because we covered it a little bit, but how would you get that started? I mean,
somebody would first have to own the game and be willing to, because the game is permanently changed, you would have to be willing to let it be changed by a group of people and then decide who keeps it at the end.
So we need to contact Avalon Hill and get them to give us 4 copies of Betrayal and maybe some stuff to talk people into playing it. They're going to get these like bonus heirloom effects or something that they get in their game that you only get if you play it at these organized play events. And then we have to find a game store with 4 tables, and we have to put a number of slots that people can sign up for and make sure that we have a minimum number of people so we can have 4 tables with 3 players and a maximum where we have 4 tables with 5 players. And I think it would need to be a league type thing where you like it's the same sort of people coming each week for 14 weeks. And we're going to come and play for an hour or maybe for 7 weeks, and you play 2 games each time.
And then the winner could walk away with the game.
With the game. Except there's no winner because it's a cooperative game. Oh, no, I guess it's a hidden trader. Oh,
actually, no. Betrayal is not a cooperative game.
It is a hidden trader reveal halfway through. Sort of cooperative, sort of not. Yeah. You know.
Yep. So, fun fact, Avalon Hill is also, I think it's owned by Wizards of the Coast. And then Wizard of the Coast is owned by Hasbro. But
I've got some emailing to do.
Yeah. Avalon Hill and Wizard of the Coast are
that is the publisher of Betrayal, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So Shelley Mazanoble, she's also on the co-host on the D&D podcast. She is the brand manager of Avalon Hill. And I talked to her at GameholeCon, and we might be able to pull something like that off.
Oh, man, this would be fun.
So I think how to do organized play of legacy games probably varies a lot on
the legacy game. Yep.
Right? Because some legacy games seem to have a lot of variance in what the rules are and how you play as the game develops after several sessions. And others seem to be more like the rules are pretty much the same. It just varies in the little details of the layout of the map or something.
Yeah.
So you would need somebody there to be the Dungeon Master Master. You need somebody who is in charge of, I am here to solve rule disputes. I am here to make sure every table has the right number of players. I am here to make sure that this organized play is organized.
Well, and I think one of the worries that I'm getting at here is if the rules change a lot from game to game, then when people are swapping tables, there's a lot of, hold on, I need some time to absorb this. I don't understand what's going on.
And in something like Charterstone, you actually make decisions on which way the rules go. So you might, depending on how you played your game, a rule might be enacted that like overstates another rule, or you'd pick it instead of a different rule.
I'm not sure this would work as well with Charterstone as it would with both Pandemic and Betrayal, because while the rules change, they change in a fairly predictable fashion.
Sure.
And you would have to, I think like Adventures League or something, you would have a character that you would have to go and level, and you have to make sure that you are playing at the correct tier. Like, what has been unlocked? What has been revealed to you? And you'd have to play at those tables.
I think Betrayal Legacy would make a good candidate for this. I don't think any of the Pandemics would.
I disagree. So I think it would work, but would have to be a different style. So I think something like Pandemic, because if I remember correctly, don't you get a score?
Well, that's spoiler, but yes. So in Pandemic, the reason I don't think Pandemic works as well is because it is kind of attached to your player as you're going through. But with Betrayal Legacy, it's attached to the family is what matters. And your characters change. They can change pretty much every chapter. They don't necessarily do, but they can. So if you each had a family card, mm-hmm. and the rules actually state you can swap in and out families and different player counts.
There's a mechanic, too, for how the families balance right. out if they haven't been playing.
But I think another one that's a really good candidate for this is Gloomhaven. Because Gloomhaven, you can be like, here's my character. And now that I have my character, I can come and play these different scenarios. And this world is moving on, whether I'm not playing this scenario or not. And that can allow you, it kind of gives you this character.
And it balances it in the rules. The rules tell you how many bad guys and how many rewards are on the table for Gloomhaven.
Based on character levels and combinations, yeah.
Because Gloomhaven is a tabletop RPG without a dungeon master.
Exactly.
It is totally set up for all of the D&D Adventures League, all the Pathfinder Society kind of modifications to work perfectly with Gloomhaven, because it is essentially the same system, but with an automatic DM doing the work. Yeah.
So one of my thoughts is if you've got a either a legacy game that has a score mechanic or that you can sort of bootstrap one onto, you could do a tournament style thing where you say, have several different teams that sign up and say, all right, we've got three different tables. You're going to play all day. Each table is doing their own thing. You're going to go through all, I don't know, 12 months or 13 stories or whatever it is. And at the end, we see which table wins.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
So bringing it back to games that actually do this now, Arkham Horror LCG. Now, this is an unofficial event at their Wizards or Fantasy Flight does a Arkham Knights thing every year. And one of the unofficial events, it's the weekend actually, but is they do an Iron Man where they pick a campaign.
That's amazing.
And they start the day at the beginning of that campaign and they play all eight scenarios in a single day with the same group and the same characters. Whoa. Going through. Like, that kind of thing is awesome.
That has to be a convention event, though. I can't.
Oh, it's at a convention. Yeah,
I can't imagine though doing that at a game store. Yeah. That's nuts.
Actually, you could do that at a game store.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you'd want to tie it to something. Say it was the, you know, the last campaign is out, and the next month is a dry month. So it's like, this is the month where we're doing our Iron Man version. And if you get through, depending on how well your group did, because it's a co-op all the way through, you get prizes and such.
I actually have a question for you guys. When I did Pokemon as a kid, the gaming itself was basically into tiers like the dungeon that D&D is, but it wasn't tiers based on your deck or anything about play. It was based on your age. So the tiers were 12 and under played each other, and then 12 to, I think it was either 16 or 18, they played each other, and 18 and up played each other. What do you guys think of breaking up players based on age?
I dislike it.
I think it's important, but I want to hear your viewpoint first.
I think it is in some ways important, and I think it is in some ways it needs to be further broken up, because I think you can have some really, really competitive nine-year-olds who are really sick of playing other nine-year-olds who are not as competitive as them.
Sure.
And then I also think it is important because if you have a nine-year-old playing a 35-year-old, you know, that 35-year-old may not be the most socially graceful person, and something they could do could like scar a nine-year-old for life.
I think when you're at a competitive level, so if it's as a casual thing, I think you can mix it, and as long as someone's comfortable playing with kids, that's fine. But some people are uncomfortable playing with kids. Some parents are uncomfortable having their kids play with 35-year-olds. Yeah. So it is important to have those tiers as options, so that, okay, I'm going to put my kid into a Pokemon tournament. I'm not worried about, you know, some 16-year-old boy making my 8-year-old daughter cry.
Yeah.
Because he's like, no, you can't play it that way. That's not how the rules work. He's like,
you don't want that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I actually think one of the better or more interesting opportunities socially for kids going to these things is the fact that they mix it up and they interact with older kids, younger kids, full-grown adults. In a way that's pretty rare in other settings.
I think it's fine for casual play. Like I say, it's just the competitive nature
tournament
of it.
Play.
So,
tournament play.
But on the competitive level. Nature, too, you have some kids who are absolute savants.
Yeah.
Well, kids who will take on as straight-up competitors, adults who are just as into it.
So oftentimes these age brackets are maximum ages for the bracket. So this will be a bracket that cuts off at 12. If you're over 12, you can't play in this bracket anymore. But if you're under and you want to play in a higher bracket, oftentimes that is allowed.
That is how our Pokemon League worked.
Yeah. So if I'm a 10-year-old, but I'm playing at the teen level, I can sign up for the teen level. I just understand that I'm opting into that. But a 16-year-old can't sign up for the 12 and under group.
Yeah, it seems kind of like a vague heuristic to get like a ranking system.
Yeah.
Right? Like, oh, you're a pro, you play in the pro league, sort of a thing.
Well, and remember, 13, especially in the US, is a cutoff age for the internet. So you can't create an account on the internet if you are under 13
without parental permission.
Supposedly.
So supposedly.
You have to check the box.
But if you're an organizer of an event, that is another age thing that you kind of take into consideration, which is why this 12 and under is such a big deal.
That makes sense.
And it makes sense to me if you need parental permission to move to the higher league. Right. And I'm fine with that. I just don't want somebody to be told you can't play with the grown-ups because you are under a certain age. I think that that can be really frustrating to really good players. But yep. I also understand the, you know, I don't want my kid to get yelled at by this person who's, you know, and it's not wrong of that person playing in a tournament to behave, as long as it's tournament appropriate behavior, in the way they would with anyone else. You don't want them couching their plays because they're playing a kid.
Yeah, and there's definitely certain games or certain sessions that you want to restrict in age, right? Like at Game Hole Con, there was a room that was just for children, and there was a room that no children were allowed in. And then all the rest of the rooms, it was any age tables.
Right.
I think that made sense.
Yep. And I think it's also fine to say you have to have a minimum understanding of the rules. Sure. And otherwise, you know, at certain tiers, the expectations of how well you know those rules are more important, more enforced.
Well, and usually with organized play, to get to the higher tier, you have to be logging your plays. You have to be doing these things and reaching them through official means. You can't just say, oh, I belong in this tier because I'm good at this game. You have to prove yourself in the lower tiers to get there.
So that's non-aged tiers.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you have like the novice, amateur, pro type of tiers, like you're not in pro tournaments in Magic unless you've won an entry into that or something like that.
Yeah.
I also remember when I was playing kids my age, I had a much better time actually relating to them, because at the time it was Pokemon. So I could talk to the other 12-year-olds about the Game Boy game we were playing. Whereas like if I was going to play a 35-year-old, they might not be into it in other forms.
They were still playing the Game Boy. Don't lie to yourself, Sydney.
Yeah, when you're first getting introduced to the game, it really makes sense to be around people in your same age group, right?
Yeah, it's just more fun that way because your peers, you have more in common. Yeah.
Sure.
I just don't want it to be limiting to anyone of a skill to be able to go to the next level.
Totally.
Now, there's one other classification that I wanted to bring up of organized play that I don't necessarily – you wouldn't typically refer to it as organized play, and that's open play. We're going to have board game nights on Mondays. A lot of game stores will do that kind of thing. I don't think of that as organized play. Typically, you show up and you can just grab a game and you form groups and whatnot. There's oftentimes not prizes or any participations or anything like that. It's just open play. I don't think of that as an organized play event in any way. But I will say, if you are a game store owner and you do have this kind of concept in your store or conventions, one of the things that makes it so much easier to organize groups within this open play is players wanted and teachers wanted signs.
Absolutely.
So if I grab a game and I have to like kind of go around and rustle players up, that's a much more difficult thing than for me grabbing a game and putting a player's wanted sign up and people looking, oh, that game is about to start and he's looking for players, so I'm going to go sit over there.
You're doing more of the organizing for the players.
Yeah, and especially if it's a big group, it's awkward for people, right? Like you don't know a lot of people there necessarily. You don't want to go up and interrupt someone who might be in the middle of something. So it really takes all that ambiguity out of it and helps streamline it.
Like a Brazilian steakhouse. You need your thing to flip up and down.
Bring
me more meat. Yes.
Brazilian steakhouses are great.
Doesn't my dad owe you dinner?
Yes, he does.
All right. So we know what we're doing. Any other comments on organized play or this kind of stuff?
I will say that for me, the line between open play and organized play is when you say what game you're playing. So if you're saying, I'm having a this night at my game store, we're going to play Splendor. And everyone is going to come. If you want to learn Splendor, if you've been living under a rock for 12 years, whatever it is, you know, like, yeah, we're all coming. We're learning. We're playing. It's a fun game. That's organized play to me. If it's open game night, it's we've got 20 games and you get to go pick one from the stack and then put up your Brazilian steakhouse signs.
Yep.
I will also say organized play is great for once your kids hit like 9 years old as babysitting. If you want to drop them off at a game store for 3 hours and come back later, it works. Yeah.
Check with the game store management and owners that that's okay though.
Oh yeah.
And that your kids can handle it, because I have been in situations where kids have been dropped off that should not have been left alone.
Yeah, you have to know the maturity level of your kid. Some 9-year-olds are going to do better than some 15-year-olds. Yep. You never know.
Yep. But I will agree, if you have a child that is like into this stuff and you might not be as much, it is a great place because they're going to be able to have a lot of good times.
How old does the kid have to be? Like, is 12 months good?
Nine was the...
Depends on the game.
Nine was the floor for my Pokemon League when I was playing.
That's a long time from now.
That is a long time from now. All right. Speaking of a long time from now, which is actually not a long time from now, a couple announcements / reminders. We are giving away a $250 gift card on our December 18th episode. In that episode, we were going to do an episode on how we would build a collection if we had $250 and Amazon. So send in your lists. You can put them on the BGG thread at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. You can email them to us. Also, our December 25th episode, which is Christmas Day, is the last episode of the year. We are going to do a questions, basically a Q&A episode. So send us your questions for that episode. All questions sent in, as long as you send it in before the 16th, will be eligible for the $250 drawing as well. Limit your questions to like maybe 3 per email. We'll get plenty of questions. So 3 really good ones is better than a list of 20, what's your favorite color questions.
Yeah.
Is it one entry per question or one per email?
One per person.
One per person. So, but you will, if you send us a list of your games, that one's going to get bonus entries, probably 5. Because if you've gone through and you made a $250 list on Amazon, we're actually going to steal some of those. So that one, you'll probably get 5 entries. If you just send us saying, hey, this is a game I think that you should definitely get, if there's going to be part of that, that's worth an entry. And the question is worth an entry as well. So you have a lot of options there. All our patrons will get their normal default entries as well. So if you don't want to do any of this, you can go to our Patreon page, which is tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. And everyone's automatically entered into all of our different giveaways. Anything else that's coming up? The holidays are going to be crazy. Oh, we should mention that if you found out that Kitty and I did not do a Kickstarter this week, that's just because too many things got busy and
holidays.
Yeah, we did. They're not going away. We'll talk more about it on our Kickstarter episode on Tuesday, though.
Or Friday. When we actually put those out.
Yes, Friday.
Because today is Tuesday if they're
today
listening
to this. Today is Tuesday. So 3 days from now, we'll have another Kickstarter episode.
I'm very confused.
Time travel podcast thing. This is only the weekend, so it's not like we're recording this like crazy early or like that. It's just everything gets so dark these days so early.
I know. It feels like midnight, but it's 5:30. Yeah.
All right. If you want to follow us, you can follow us on Facebook. We're at /Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. We're at Twitter at @TabletopGameTLK. Kitty's Lawful Good Mom. Josh is Josh's Blonde. I'm Chris's Game Master Chris. I know who I am, honest. And I already talked about the Patreon stuff, so Kitty's turn.
Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening, and remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions about today's topic at feedback@tabletopgametalk.com, and you'll be entered into a $250 gift card drawing on our December 18th episode.
Finally, a huge thank you to all of our patrons. Emil Jiljam, George Gia, Adam Harrison, the SGC, Thomas Acciaretti, Samir Biswas, Jason Strong, Terrence Milner, Steven Zeitz,
Michael Ull, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Stephen Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong,
Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Kyle Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Schwartzel, Jordan Livingston, Chad Covey, Ann Reynolds, Eric Huffman, Adrian Dong,
Christopher Vincent, Nate, Foz Flintham, Sean Peck, Eric Slander, does it?
Slander.
You're slandering a lot of these days.
Yeah, I know. Mike Smith, Christine Meyer, Trevor Davis, Wesley Traylor? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Tim Verdig, Chris Lowe, Joe Hoover, Timothy Gross, and Glenn Cotter.
Until next week, keep playing games and having fun. Alright, so now we're going to a Christmas party.
Yep.
We're going to give away gifts.
Yes.
I'm excited for ours.
Yep, we're going to bring Betrayal Legacy.
You don't get the gift, right? You give away the gift.
Aww.
Yeah, that's so fine. But we're going to bring Betrayal Legacy, sneak down to the basement, and get one more game in.
That's the goal.
Really? I don't think they have a basement.
Oh, crap. Or we could just skip the party and stay and play.
Done.